Live from Brussels, Belgium, at the DrupalCon 2006 Belgium conference. We'll rehearse this next time. This is the Drupal Lullabot Drupal podcast live.
This is how we usually do this, believe it or not. It's a lot like this, where we do this at home. So,
I'm Jeff Robbins, and we've got a panel of Drupal experts up at the front of the room, and probably a lot of Drupal experts in the audience, and we're going to try and answer questions that people have. Hopefully, they are either... Well, actually, any questions will be fine. I'm sure it will benefit people of all Drupal levels. So, first of all, let me introduce the people we've got up at the front of the room here. We've got Ted Serbinski from Lullabot. Ted's waving right now.
Radio,
yeah, it's okay. Well, I'll translate into radio speak. We've got Dries Boytart, who is the founder of Drupal Things and very tall. We all look up to him. Zach Rosen, who just started a brand new company. Are you announcing this yet? Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
It's called Chapter 3, doing yet more amazing things with Drupal and web technologies. Angie Byron, web chick of the Lullabot team. And Adrian Russo, Drupal genius, and one of the men behind Bright, BRYGHT.com. Yeah, and so I'm not even quite sure how we should do this. I mean, I just sort of figured, you know, we all get together and it'd be just awesome. And so this is the point where we really sink or swim. And
awesome.
There could potentially be...
What we should do is... if people just want to stand up and maybe walk up here closer to the microphone and ask a question.
People have specific questions or topics or areas of confusion or perhaps intense enlightenment that they'd like to share.
Or good jokes.
This is, yeah.
Just physical humor doesn't really work on podcasts.
Well, let's just talk amongst ourselves a little bit. Maybe we'll inspire them. what have been the highlights of the DrupalCon so far for y'all? What'd you like, Zach?
Well, I don't know anyone here for the most part, which is awesome because I thought I knew a lot of people, but apparently that's not true. And it is this whole Drupal Europe scene thing, and that's the first time I've done a DrupalCon in Europe, so that was great.
There are a lot of Drupal people in the world, and
Yeah.
A lot of them are from Europe.
And a lot of them are from Europe, yes. I understand that there's also a lot from Asia as well. We're going to have to do a DrupalCon...
Singapore
or something like that. That's exciting. I wonder if they're listening right now.
Sushi all day.
Yeah!
How's that different from DrupalCon Vancouver?
Because you can't pronounce the sushi names in Asia, I guess. I don't know. So, Adrian did some really interesting talk about the continuing world of the Drupal Form API, which sort of expands into a whole data API.
Yeah, essentially, we learned a lot of lessons while doing the Form API for Drupal 4.7 and Drupal 5.0, and we actually want to try and clean up the API as much as possible and also move towards a more consistent model view controller architecture. Because it's very close to what we already have, but if we just actually make the concepts and the data model and everything as clear, as concise as possible, we are able to have a lot more functionality than we have now, and it solves a lot of problems, specifically things like context when we're rendering data, like knowing, for instance, that this field is a title field, or that this field needs to have a certain type of filter run on it, etc., etc. So it'll be better for the overall architecture to actually just separate out the data structures and make it all pretty.
Cool. It all just blows my mind, mostly. I think I kind of understand it, but I don't understand most of it, but I think it's all right. And Stephen Wittens just finished a jQuery talk. I think all of this, in one form or another, is going to be available on video up at Drupal.org in one form or another. There's a lot of it that I'll just watch again just to try and figure out what Adrian was saying. the stuff that Adrian says once, it takes me twice to fully understand.
Well,
it.
My slide and my test document is already in my sandbox in CVS. So
there
if you
go.
Actually want to look at the code or look at the slides again, an example.
Cool. And the jQuery stuff was really, that was a great presentation that Stephen did. Really super inspiring kind of stuff.
You guys can't actually see this, but the tags here that the name badges they gave it, they have these things that you can tag what your interests are, and one of them there is like jQuery lover. I think that after Stephen's presentation, I think like 99% of the audience could just tag.
Yes, everyone goes back and give me a pen. I need to circle that. Yeah, it's awesome, and. There's also been like a few different tracks that have been happening, right? I mean, I sort of get the feeling that when you put this together, Dries, that you sort of thought about like the advanced users and sort of mid-level users and new users, and made sure that they had a chance to go to everything. That was really great.
And we also had a coder's corner where people could just sit down and do random stuff.
For the really advanced people, or
right.
or really newbies. I'm just going to check my email. and that was really cool. I didn't get a chance to go to a lot of the, there wasn't really much reason for me to go to a lot of the more newbie kind of stuff, but does anyone want to talk a little bit about that?
Question.
We have a question.
Yay! There's been a lot of talk about what's coming out in 5.0 of Drupal and lots of interesting features, but I'm wondering if any of you are thinking ahead about what big challenges would you like to tackle next in the next sort of release of Drupal?
5.1?
Yeah.
Is no one ever satisfied? We got to 5.0. What more could you want?
I can have a go at that.
Sure.
So, at least for me, one of the things which are going to be increasingly important are, on the one hand, internationalization, which allows you to not just translate the user interfaces of Drupal, but also the actual contents. And then the other big thing, in my view, are going to be what is called or referred to as end-user programming, which is essentially stuff like the CCK and views, which I hope we can get more of into Drupal core. So
sort of stuff that people can do. If anyone's ever used most sort of Apple iApps or Automator or something like that, where there's sort of a graphical interface for people that have used CCK, where there's a graphical interface for creating essentially programmatic kind of stuff.
Right.
More of that, yeah.
And it all ties in with the data API or whatever API it's going to be called.
Yeah.
We just talked about with Adrian. So.
Yeah. By the way, we're still looking for a good name for it because we've been calling this entire system we've developed the Forms API, but it has very, very little to do with Forms.
So does data API not hit it?
Well, I think it's actually several different APIs. We just need to figure out what you call each component.
Drupal API?
You should just call it Drupal.
Yeah. It's open source, so we don't really need to name it. I don't know. It's just all in there.
API.
Cool.
Did the answer actually satisfy you, or was you hoping for some other direction?
Yeah. I guess I'll just sort of understand what you think the challenges are right now for people and what you need to work on, as well as
So these were more of the innovative challenges. Of course, there's also usability and all of the ongoing issues we still have to refine and work on. But I think the big new things will be stuff like CCK views and internationalization and the data API.
Also, one of the other big things we're looking for, maybe even for 5.0, is having a new core team and also improving themeability for designers. It's a major concern of ours for the next releases further to actually make the system as easy as possible to theme for new users and to have it actually ship and look pretty out of the box.
Yeah, that's a big focus. And there's also the new menu system that Caroli had a light bulb explode over his head the last night and decided to block out a 15, quote, I'm making air quotes, 15-minute block today that turned into 2 hours or something like that of more mind-blowing ways to redo and solve a lot of the problems we've been having with the...
Yeah, specifically performance.
Specifically performance, which is another big focus. I mean, I think that there's a lot of larger sites that are coming out using Drupal, and a lot of people focused on, you know, what happens when you have a million users all logged in at once and stuff like that. So there's a lot of focus being put on that stuff. So I think we're going to see more and more of that just sort of as things move forward. So it's exciting.
So those are not active, and they changed on the recorded case on how to kind of solve the access payment.
Yeah, something that has been added to 5.0 is the ability to combine multiple node access modules together. In the olden days, which is now, you had to pick if you want to use organic groups or if you want to use taxonomy access or if you wanted to use node privacy by role or something like that to restrict viewing access of nodes because there was no way to combine privileges together. If one module said you can access this and the other one said you can't, who wins? No one knows. So anyway, we didn't support that in 4.7 and earlier, but in 5.0 that's something that's been added, and that will provide a lot of flexibility for doing all kinds of funky stuff like private forums and who knows. Hmm. Is that what you were saying? Cool.
I can edit this little bit out, so feel free to, we can wait you out.
There's also a lot of the patches in the queue already. Like for instance, the new module administration pages, which fall under usability improvements we're busy working on.
Yeah.
A dependency system so that we can eventually do stuff like.
Now this is the stuff that's going into 5.0 now, right?
We hope.
Yeah,
we hope.
So, we hope. So it's not actually kind of there yet.
Almost. So yes, we're going to try and let it slip in. Like that's like the only exception we're going to make, because much of the work has been done before the code freeze, and we just had to, you know, put the final polish in place. So we're going to still try and put that into 5.0.
Cool.
Can we fix signatures in 5.0?
So dependencies? Tell me what dependencies are and how they work.
Well, we now have a packaging system, which is also tied into the work that Derek Wright's doing on Drupal.org, where all modules would be versioned.
Can you get that out
here? I have to get it out of there. Even you owe me 20 euros. Anyway. So all versions, all packages would be versioned, and you could actually have dependencies between packages, which is far safer because, for instance, with e-commerce, at the moment, it's not really all that apparent when you install the e-commerce module what you need to enable. Like, you enable a module and your entire site is hosed. So there's an entire workflow side of things where if you say that this module requires these other modules to work, when you enable it, like, it won't run or won't enable itself without the other modules. And that also ties into a lot of the packaging stuff that we're doing on Drupal.org. Like, for instance, the distributions, where distributions, for instance, would require a set of other modules, and that would automatically get built and distributed.
Right. And so how are... I still am not quite understanding how distributions will work. Will they come as a download that you singly download, or will they come as a, hey, you need to download this stuff too, or do we not know quite yet?
I think we're not...
I'm going to take that as a we don't know quite yet.
Yeah, the thing is, like, the code could be used for different purposes. I mean, if you just want to have one Drupal site that is configured as a Drupal blog, it would make more sense for you to download drupal-blog-version-number.tar.gzip and just installing a server. But if you're running multiple sites, there's a very good likelihood that each of the different sites would be running different distributions, for instance. So you might want one site directory with multiple distributions and just choose the right distributions on installation. So it really depends on the use case.
Mm.
And we don't really have a guideline to what use cases we want to use it for yet.
Time will tell.
Time will tell.
The brave new world.
Yes. Time. And at the rate we're going, the time will tell is usually like about like, I don't know, a day or two days usually.
No, it's 5 minutes.
Yeah. I'm thinking that with the Drupal versions that this one's 5.0 because there's so much more. And now we're talking about so much more to go in 5.1 that I think that the next version will be 6, and then after that we're just going to have to jump to 8. And then, you know, 12, and then it's just, you know, version infinity and 1.
We should just name it, like, Drupal Web 3.11 for WordPress.
Yes, yeah. Drupal 5 for Web 2.0. Yeah.
Just back to the dependencies thing, Adrian mentioned the versions of the modules, but as I understand it, the dependency stuff in 5.0 is just this module depends on that one. There's no notion of this module depends on this version of that one, which would be something to figure out once we have modules and versions, how that should really play out. So just so people don't get confused, even though we talk about both of those things in the same sentence, they don't yet have anything to do with each other, but they will.
Yeah, it's an important distinction. It's essentially... Yeah. Like all the packaging systems like apt-get and portage and all those, we need to look at that.
Cool.
There is actually code written by a French guy, first name, and it's basically a whole packaging system and install system for modules with dependency, I don't know how he solved it, based on the way aptitude app works.
Hmm. Except it's not GPL, I think.
It's
code. Oh, it is, okay. I'm thinking of it.
It's an RCDS, yes.
Wow, that's interesting. Do we know what it's called?
Yeah, it's under SimpleScripts. It's module installer.
SimpleScripts?
Yeah.
And module installer.
Yeah, it's called module installer and it's under all these scripts.
Hey, I said we had some experts in the room. We could probably benefit from some experience. That's cool. So what does it do? It downloads the module from Drupal.org and installs it and...
It's a shell script, right?
Yep.
Shell, yeah.
One of the big things we also had before this is the dependency information needs to be somehow like related to the module. And the previous way to add information to the modules before they were all in their own directories was to have a hook in the module. But we only just added the .info files, which allows you to specify it depends on these modules. So the case with that would have been that he would have possibly tried to programmatically figure out which modules need which things, which wouldn't be ideal.
Right.
So these things need to actually be developed by the developers. So we could actually look at that code for 5.0 now that we have the base requirement of the metadata information.
So yeah, so the new, in 5.0 modules come with these .info files. Should we talk a little bit about like what those are and why those are and what can be done with those? Is there much to them? I mean...
Well, one of the big things that I think a lot of people have actually seen, one of the biggest problems we've had with Drupal, if you go to add admin modules and you just add that one extra module, all of a sudden you get a white screen and you don't know why. I can see everyone like nodding in the room. Because basically what happens is previously Drupal tried to load the module and call a specific function just to get the title description. Now, if you actually include all the files that like you could have, and you could have hundreds and hundreds of modules, you reach the default memory limits for PHP incredibly quickly.
And it's worth pointing out that loads every module, not even if you don't have it enabled and it's just sitting there in the directory, every single one gets loaded. Do I need to sit closer?
No, I'm just making sure that we're still recording. We've had some experiences with the podcast. Just sometimes, you know, you think you hit the record button, but... And then you have to call the whole team again and say, hey, remember that podcast we did this morning? Let's do it again. And then try and sound spontaneous and stuff like that. We have a question?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there are any organized efforts to market Drupal or to work on the Drupal brand. You know, I can tell that it seems like in the nonprofit NGO sector, Drupal seems to be having a certain amount of success. I'm thinking about the academic sector. where we often have to spend a lot of time trying to convince our administrators that $20,000 software isn't necessarily better.
Yeah, I mean, the nonprofit sector, you have that advantage that there's already no marketing, so they like, oh, that's just like the other things we don't know about. And so, so you want to talk about marketing Drupal, Zach?
Yeah, well, there's no central and kind of led effort in marketing. And it is a big gap, and I think we need people, we need help, but mostly I think we need leaders to help step in and drive the effort. And there's a lot of people independently thinking about this and working on it in their own ways, but I think we could get a lot of leverage out of the assets we have within the community in terms of, you know, people and their skills, but also just being able to coordinate. You know, you have tens of vendors going out and pitching in a little different way, probably talking about things with different terminology. Maybe they link back to Drupal, they start explaining Drupal, but if you had a more coordinated effort with people who do a lot of outreach, you could be much more effective. And also the kind of no-brainer stuff of if you go to Drupal.org and you aren't a techie, it's going to make no sense. Right? There's just nothing there for you really to get it. So there's a lot of work that needs to get done, and we need help. But I think at this point we need people to kind of step forward and say, I'm going to help drive this.
And this is a thing I think that for people that are new to Drupal or sort of coming in, and I mean it's sort of a catch-22 because it's hard to get new people involved if it looks like it's difficult to get involved. I mean to come to Drupal.org and say, I'm not quite a techie, but I'm a marketing person, but all this is techie, and I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess I could help make it marketing, but I'd have to talk to these techie people. I really want to encourage people to just sort of knock down that wall and just start doing stuff. I mean, really, what I've found, and I think everybody on this panel has found, is that the way you do stuff is because you can go into the IRC room and say, "Does anybody think it would be a good idea if I did some marketing?" And usually, the response will be, "Shut up, newbie." You know, and so, and the way that you can become not a newbie is, that's Angie. Yeah, she's like that. And just ignore Angie, first of all. No, actually, she got a reputation for being nice. Just dive in and do it. I mean, to submit a new design for Drupal.org and say, "Hey, I mocked this up in Photoshop. Is anybody excited about this?" And lots of times what will happen is maybe it won't quite work out the way you thought, but it might inspire another, well, if that guy's going to do this in Photoshop, maybe I should do one. And all of a sudden there's eight different great versions of Photoshop, and then somebody decides to build it out, and all of a sudden we have a new Drupal.org, finished kind of thing that has a great marketing and maybe some photographs or pictures of some kind on the page. That would be nice. I'm just saying, I know for a long time the Mambo people had a picture of a rock. And it was just like, you could just go there and it was like, a rock.
Simple.
And, yeah. And,
but not Iraq.
And we have a little alien head.
One thing that would be a great place for somebody who's interested in that kind of thing, if there's not already, go to groups.drupal.org, which is sort of the working group site, and start a marketing group. And if there is one, get involved and start pushing people to get involved.
But again, don't try and get a consensus, especially with some of these things. It's like, just go. I mean, you know, it's marketing. What are you going to say? Oh, we should come up with a way to market. It's like, just do it. You know, Drupal kicks ass, you know. Agreed? No? You know, and kind of move forward from there. So, it's really, it's one of those things, it's up to the people
This might also actually be something which the Drupal Association or the Drupal Foundation could help with or provide some money for.
Right.
It would still require people to step forward and do most of the work, but eventually the foundation could support these efforts if necessary.
And it's also amazing when you do that stuff how quickly you can become the whatever, you know. I made an Ajax module, and for a while there, I was the Ajax guy. Like, I don't know.
I think there's really simple wins out there in market speak. So the video casts are super, they're not that hard to do. And they're appealing for a number of different reasons. But just being able to show people, it's a big difference between, you know, dumping people on a page with all this technical explanation of all the cool stuff that it does. But just being able to show people in 5 minutes yeah, with, you know, views and CCK and video module, you can create YouTube, you know, like this, is a lot of folks is pretty mind blowing because it's hard to conceive, you know. It's one thing to have a developer tell you, yeah, it's possible to do these things with Drupal. It's another thing to see a developer kind of build a site before you using those tools, and you see the kind of like a finished solution. Then things start to click.
And again, it inspires more of that, and you attract yourself to other people who are doing the same kinds of stuff. So it's really cool. We had a question here.
I mentioned the article from IBM.
Yeah, the IBM articles have been really helpful.
And that's really great thing to sell Drupal to administrators.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's about legitimacy, and especially, you know, it's a catch-22 with, it's like, it's open source. Who wrote it? The community wrote it? Who can we blame if it doesn't work right? And stuff like that. And to see IBM using it, to see large projects like the MTV project come together and these other ones, we're really starting to break through those walls, and I really think things are going to grow exponentially from here on out, and I think we'll see more and more of that. I'm going to get the IBM guys on a podcast pretty soon, so cool. That should be interesting.
We have been growing exponentially from day one almost, so. So there's that.
That's good.
First day you have 1 user, second day you have 2 users, growth 100%.
Yep. And it's still going at that rate pretty much, so that's good. Any other questions?
I'm just gonna go back to the white screen of death that you mentioned earlier. How is there any way to get rid of it other than I've had it with several specific modules and I just have to sort of move them out of the contrib module folder? And is there
have to have server access and you have to actually edit your php.me file to increase your memory limit.
Yeah. So the problem is that PHP is over its memory limit. It's trying to digest all of the modules at once on the modules page to figure out what's there and if it works and how it works, and you've got all of e-commerce in there, and most of them are turned off because you're just testing it out, but what happens is that PHP goes over its memory limit and that's the white page.
I tried removing a bunch of other modules just to limit the number of things, and it's still these particular several.
It'll depend on how big, how many, say, lines of code it is, and how many other include files it has and stuff. The good news is in Drupal 5.0 that won't ever happen again, because it parses it out of the .info files, which are tiny, tiny little text files that just have the name, the description, and potentially the dependencies, hopefully, and then that's it. So they just load those tiny little files for everything, and that's. So no more white screens to death.
So is there a recommended one? Because I have 32 megabytes, which I thought was a very generous PHP memory.
That's okay.
How many modules do you have?
Quite a few. I mean, quite a few. But a lot of
taken the entire contrib directory and dragged it into your module.
It's on my test site, so I have also modules that are not enabled. I just put them in there and then.
That's what happens. Yeah.
So related question then, if I know in the database I can just delete. Because the modules stay, if I remove them from the directory, they still stay on that listing.
Not if you save the page again, it will clear them out.
What?
Yep.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some.
Except that you can't save the page. Because
when
you
it's
get
a white screen
of
death, you can't.
If you take them out of the modules directory, though, you won't get the white page of death anymore. So.
True.
And on an older browser, it might be a gray page of death.
I would like to add to the white screen of death. The memory is not always the cause. If you have a non-classical module or something that errors out, you also get the module.
Yeah, if your PHP is configured
so
to not.
Check your error log to see whether memory is indeed the case.
Yep.
This is a thing we should talk about a little bit, that people should be sure to turn on the error display especially it's open source, so there's no warranty. It could be getting errors. And so it's helpful to see those errors because sometimes you go to the page, and I see this a lot on live sites where they'll say, it's just not working. And then you realize that they have the errors turned off so that the end users aren't seeing the errors, which is a good thing. But at the same time, as a developer, you're not seeing what's going wrong, so you need to look at the logs. And
it's not really true in that case, because a lot of servers switch it off the security reasons.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't want to tell people what exactly is what's going on behind the scenes, right?
But as a developer, you should have it turned on.
But on your development environment, you should turn it on.
But yeah, in general, we have a lot of frequently asked questions in forums and on the site. And they're also listed as frequently asked questions, which are things which are out of our control, namely why screens at that.
Right.
There are more of these. How do we deal with that in common, actually? Should we deal with it?
I think one of the best new changes in 5.0 is something I think Stephen worked on, which is basically checks your environment in admin settings at this point. I don't know when this loads, but
it loads at install time, and whenever you visit the administration page, it checks your Drupal environments and tries to find problems that might prevent it from A, installing, or B, breaking an existing site. Like, what sometimes happens is an administrator upgrades his PHP installation or changes the MySQL version, and then people using that platform, their site suddenly breaks and they have no idea why. So that's one of the things it can also detect.
Right. Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, speaking about forums and support-wise, people, a lot of people sometimes drop by the IRC channel. The Drupal main channel just for kind of coding questions and that. Would it be not advisable to kind of move maybe support to the main channel and then Drupal to
Stephen, come here and give your rant.
I've seen a lot of people talking about it, but every time when someone's going to go to, and if I want help with PhD, I'll drop by maybe PHP. If I want help with MySQL, I'll drop by MySQL kind of thing.
Yes, there's an inherent sort of issue. I won't call it a problem, but I'll call it an issue.
A challenge.
And just to sort of clarify, there's an IRC, a very active IRC chat room. If you can figure out IRC, it's very helpful. At Pound Drupal in the Freenode system. I don't exactly know what that means, but my IRC thing opens automatically. I set it up at one point. It works like most of these things. Like, you get it working, and that's just it. But that room, the Pound Drupal room, is really the developers' channel. And then there's a Drupal hyphen support room that's more of the newbie questions kind of stuff. And so there's this problem that happens lots of times with people just sort of assume that the Pound Drupal room is the support room, and they come in there and start asking questions, and then someone sort of triggers the bot to give them some guidance on moving to another room. And it's hard not to affect egos and that kind of thing when you're moving people off to other rooms. But there's been some talk about switching it around. It actually comes up from time to time. And what's the general thinking on why or why not? Stephen Wittens.
Okay. essentially, of the two channels, Drupal and Drupal Support, Drupal is the most active one. It's where most people hang out. There's one point is that simply it doesn't make sense to make Drupal Support the main one because it's not as active. What happens often is people ask questions in Drupal Support and then they don't get an answer because not many people do IRC support. And then they come by hash Drupal and they're like, yeah, but nobody answered my question, as if that somehow entitled them to, you know, bug other people who are obviously not interested in providing support to do so.
Right.
The other point is that IRC support is really only useful for a certain class of problems, in that any information which you type into the IRC channel sort of disappears into a black hole. Because it's, you know, not available for reference later on, as opposed to, for example, forum topics or mailing lists. Now, an issue, like a suggestion that people have is, well, why don't we log the IRC channel and make those logs available? But honestly, have you ever tried reading an IRC log to find out? I have. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you spend an hour reading through people talking about 12 subjects at once, trying to find an answer somewhere.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, I personally don't believe in IRC support, so that's also why I'm against making Drupal support the main channel. But I think, you know...
I guess it could be argued that since unlike PHP or JavaScript or even Rails, where there might be a reason to go there and ask there because there's not an alternative. With Drupal, we have forums that are specifically for that. I mean, it's also arguable that at both pound Drupal-support and the forums, there need to be more people helping, more people responding, and it's also a great way to learn about these things and appear to be an expert by giving slightly correct answers.
I don't necessarily agree with these statements. I mean, I think some people prefer support on IRC versus support on the forums, and I think it's perfectly valid to ask for support on IRC. Like, just like some people might actually prefer support over a telephone or something, which is, I think, a perfectly...
Support over IRC is a very intensive process, and those who don't wish to provide it should not be
forced to. Yeah, sure, but it's, I mean, it's... It should be an option.
So that's why
you do have the advantage that you can disappear for a while and say, oh, I had to pee. You know, or, oh.
There's an argument as well that Drupal is more of a plumber's tool, so thus main channel for kind of plumbing activity, and then if you want to do something else, go to the support channel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, both work. I'd say, you know, try both. I mean, I totally understand that lots of times people have immediate problems where it's like, I've been working on this and I just need just someone to just point me in the right direction. Yeah. And
oftentimes it's not even worth creating a forum topic for.
Yeah. You can call into the podcast, but it sometimes takes us weeks to reply. So... other questions, comments, suggestions, criticisms?
Well, actually, I think that at least in the novels, it seems that the support on the forum is dwindling. Mm-hmm. So dwindling, and there it can be because there is a higher amount of questions, so the amount of answers is the ratio.
So what you're saying is that basically the ratio of people asking questions to people answering questions is out of whack. And so
more or less a feeling. I can't support your data.
Yeah. How can we encourage people to pay it forward?
I think a lot of that is a direct correlation to Stephen Stepek's work life. I mean, he's like, there's only a few number of people that I know of who really actually take the time to really own those forums. Those people are amazing. But you're right, there's not enough of them. And I think if we could try to recruit more people to do that, and if you have ideas about that, it'd be great. But I think you're probably right that, you know, exponential increase in users will lead to exponential more people scratching their heads and coming and asking questions.
One thing that, if you're an aspiring Drupal ninja, answering support questions is a really, really great way to get there. Even if you think of yourself as a total newbie, chances are, if you've installed Drupal, you know more than someone else. So, no, I'm serious. Like, so look around for questions and kind of idle on the IRC channel. Because this is what I did when I first started learning Drupal, because I was lost, right? I was like, what's a hook and you know? So I would start, like, you know, just idling in the IRC channel, and eventually someone asked a question and be like, I know that one! And then I'd answer it. And over time, I started to see I knew more and more and more, and then, hey, you know. No. But, you know, it's a great great way to help your own skills and also help other people. So.
Talking about Wolfie.
Yeah.
To add to that, for those of us, for example, who are people who have organizations or sponsor developers or have larger organizations, I would say a good thing to carve out as part of your development policy, a built-in amount of cost and load for community involvement and sustainment, and that forum support is part of it, right? So that if you're getting advantage out of the contributions that are being made in your rolling patches back and if you're sponsoring embedded developers, go ahead and carve out, like, say, you know, you could come up with, like, programs like, say, all right, you know, an hour a day is dedicated to community support, or you know, every other Friday, take the Friday morning on company time to contribute back. And I think that for those of us that have that opportunity to lay those kinds of policies or guidance in the organizations, that might be.
Yeah, I mean, it really has to do with sustainability. I agree that companies that are doing a lot of development work and might have Drupal developers on staff and also project management people who are managing those people's times, to set aside some time for those people to be involved in the community and give support to the community that ultimately gave you this really great free software. You know, just budget it in as part of the cost. Ultimately, it's going to be a whole lot cheaper than a lot of other proprietary solutions. And I think it ultimately benefits the company to be tapped in and understand who's out, who's doing what, and the different things and stuff like that, because it's a lot easier to contact and ask someone to fix the image something module, you know, if you know who they are and they know who you are, and you know, you have a rapport there. It's ultimately going to save you time and money potentially. So,
for budding developers who want to do work on hire, who might be in this room, I mean, I personally, I'm sure this is true of a lot of people, but I personally get pinged at least 3 or 4 times a week, or people asking me, so I'm doing this project and I have all this money and I need this done pretty soon, who do I hire to do X? X might be commerce, X might be build me a website, it might be something else. And every time I refer them to people, it's just people I know through the community. It's people I know I can trust because I've seen the work in the open.
Right.
And then it's kind of crazy because then, you know, I forget about that project and I come back and, you know, oh, whoever has been working with this organization for 6 months. It's like, that really is driving that kind of scenario is driving so much what happens in the Drupal world.
Right. And there's another reason. Yeah. Just become involved in the community, because just literally by helping out and posting help on Drupal, other people will come through and say, wow, this person's really, really knows their stuff. We should nose around and see if they need some work.
Pretty soon your email inbox is overflowing.
With offers from all sorts of wonderful people and companies.
It's really how it happens.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's truly how it happens. I mean, yeah, when people ask me, I think, like, who's the new people who are bubbling up in the community?
And there's not enough.
There's never enough.
Yeah, this is why we started the Drupal camp with, like, scenario, to actually train up as many people as we can.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I think it's actually each of our responsibilities, just like at one point you were a newbie, and other people helped you get on board and get up to speed, or answer to your questions in the forums, or help you on IRC asking questions about module development. Right? If you got past this stage, then now it's your turn to help other people, just like you have been helped before. So I think it's really important to understand and to keep in mind that this responsibility is a distributed one, which all of us have to take part in, because that's the only way to do it. The only way that will scale.
And so is documentation.
well, on that, I mean, I think I personally have seen the documentation improvements over the last year made a dramatic effect in the community. So people are asking, in a lot of cases, different questions, or we're getting kind of a whole different level of interaction, I guess, with users, because very often there's not just one page to, you know, so how do I see my user profile, right? And there's like 20 pages of people with snippets and examples and walkthroughs. And the cool thing about the documentation is it just kind of, everyone had known for a long time that our documentation in Drupal for users, the developers is a different story, for users was lacking. There was just not enough effort. And that kind of was bubbling around, but it a couple people, Kieran being one of them, kind of just took it upon themselves, we're going to fix this problem. And sure enough, you know, they locked themselves in the room for a couple of weeks, and within 3 months, the whole ball got rolling, and now it's a completely different scenario.
If there's ever anything that you figure out, or by yourself or with the help of others, that's not documented yet, document it. Because A, you'll never have to figure it out again, and B, it's there for reference so other people can look at it too, and you're, you know, passing along the good will of everything.
And you look like an expert, and you get a job, and make lots of money, and buy a big house. And
just a question, are we going to start feeling the same way about unit tests too?
Yeah.
I hope
the question was, are we going to feel the same way about unit tests too?
The same way that if you write...
If you contribute modules that the community or somebody could help also with unit testing and general quality.
Yeah, I think that's something a responsible module maintainer should be doing, is creating unit tests and testing their own modules to make sure they're not breaking anything. And patch, core patch contributors, too.
Should we explain quickly what unit tests are?
No.
Just screw you, newbies. We're not going to explain what unit tests are.
Okay, unit test basically takes a little tiny chunk of what Drupal does, like, say, save a user profile, and logs, when I pass in something, 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 it should return blah. And it's just a bunch of tiny little functions basically like that that test little aspects of Drupal functionality. And what they're good for is that once you've written a test, unless that functionality changes in the future, you really only have to do that like once. And then in the future, if I make a patch for the theme system, and all of a sudden it breaks the user profile system, I instantly know, hey, this pass or this test doesn't pass anymore. So it takes a lot of the tedium out of testing patches, because the first thing you do is you test a patch, you click on every single thing, and you know. So it can handle a lot of that kind of stuff for you, and it also can catch just totally bizarre interrelated things that you would never think to catch yourself.
Yeah. One of the other things with the data model that the data API that we want to implement is it also improves the ability to write unit tests to the level that every single data model, like all terms, all users, all profile fields, all content types, everything can automatically have unit tests created for it, so that every time something changes in core, we can run the unit tests for every single data entity and see that it can still be created, read, updated, and deleted, and still have the same results. So as far as the data access layer of that is concerned, it would help us incredibly to actually make sure we're consistently handling everything.
Does anyone actually know the status of the amount of unit tests available for
Google? Rock Zender is running around here somewhere.
Yeah. Hey, there he is!
He's the man to talk to. He's written for his Summer of Code project an automated test suite that when you it'll grab a patch and it will run the unit test and tell you if it passed or failed. Very cool, and you should talk to him.
So.
Or would you like to get up and say something about that?
Yeah, there's about 16 test cases, which means that some like basic user registration, basic user access, no additions, stuff like that's tested, with about 402 servers altogether. But that's a low number, because there is really no unit testing. I mean, basic functions, like for example, node safe, is not tested thoroughly. Not every way through the node safe function is tested, and that's where there should be some development.
Yeah, I asked that mainly because I'd like to know if there is intention or even people would want to go towards a kind of test-driven development for Drupal, especially core or maybe even contributions.
I think ultimately it'll save people a lot of time. I mean, and as Drupal gets more complex, the process of testing patches and that type of thing that people submit gets more and more complex and more difficult. And I mean, especially if it's something like installing, you know, here's a patch to make the installer work better. So just install it over and over again and try it in all the different ways of installing over and over and over again and uninstall it and empty the databases and start, you know, that's the kind of stuff where it's really helpful to have basically a robot test it out. So.
Yeah, one of the other things is forms in Drupal 5.0. We released a patch which makes all forms programmatically submittable. And one of the first things that I did with that is actually did a macro recorder, so you actually just fill in the details in the form and it saves the fields that you filled in. And you can also then just write an assertion at the back end of that. So it could get a lot easier to, for instance, test that all the different cases of how you can fill in forms and see if they still result in the same thing. One of the use cases for that is actually automating test cases and automating, so when you start the new site, it automatically replays all the forms to make sure that it still gets to the same status at the end of the site, at the end of the macro.
I just want to make it clear that Adrian just said he wrote a macro recorder for Drupal.
Yeah.
It's like,
Drupal genius.
We're going to take down Microsoft in no time.
Then he started working on the clip.
On the what? On the clip, yeah, on the paperclip.
That's the actual
intelligent
reason.
Agent to watch
that's
you as you work
reason.
In your Drupal site.
That's the actual reason we decided to implement jQuery.
Yeah.
jQuery has a built-in paperclip function. We had a question from the back of the room. Ivan?
It's more of a comment. Just there was a conversation earlier about, like, you know, newbies and all that kind of stuff. And, I've found, at least in my experience, that one of the really great ways to understand a system sometimes is to begin by doing a lot of, like, unit testing type stuff. That you really get into the guts of the system, you begin to understand it, they're not super complex to write in general, and as you move out of that, you can really begin to move up and start doing other kinds of things. So it's just a suggestion that for some people who are interested, that is a way to immediately possibly contribute and to also learn a lot about how an internal system might work, that in my development experience has been helpful.
Yeah. It's also addictive. You get addicted to trying to figure out different ways to break Drupal and see what it does. And so you're like, well, what if I do this? And what if I did that? And, you know, and once you've written a test to do that and you've saved it to the, you know, collection of them, then other people can say, oh, but you didn't think of this. And, you know, you try to, it's fun.
Well, and in the same way, we should also try and inspire people to go through the patch queue and do some of that fun kind of testing as well, and you know, it's a great way to get some juice in the community. Is to be like, wow, that's
actually that is quite addictive, can't find it at the same time. But I think for the past few weeks, since the stream, DHF has set up a channel called Drupal Bugs, and then it's like a bug hour each night kind of thing, where you come in, if you don't know nothing about Drupal or whatever, just kind of PHP, but you come in. You're given a kind of a patch to look up, review, or even see what you can do about it. And then if you don't know nothing, you're directed to maybe look it that way, see how, if you can figure it that way. And it kind of, what it does, it kind of, if you feel like you're doing something, that you're giving back something, it kind of gets your, say, at least morale kind of up.
And it's also a great way to run your fingers through the code. I mean, if you're new to the Drupal code base, I mean, to start with something and figure out what it's doing and why it's not doing it right and stuff like that, I mean, it's a whole other world than sort of coming at it from the top-down approach, you know, of writing a module and not being quite sure what's happening underneath, but the module works. So
I think one example was delete and comment, multiple comments delete, kind of thing, where some guy was just saying that he couldn't delete one comment, and then it was a case of you can't delete any comment. So I think there was about three of us, and we were just trying to bang our heads together, trying to figure out what was happening, and then in the end it turned out it was just a problem with the multi-step forms kind of thing, where it didn't kind of right function.
Right.
And now you already know more about 5.0 Forms API than I do. So
yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, it's a great way to learn and meet people and ultimately help to get 5.0 out, so we don't look like idiots saying it's going to come out in a few months. So really, it's all about me.
Let's make that an announcement. If you like Raven and Drupal, every weekday at 8 UTC, so it might not be very confusing for everyone, in the channel Drupal Bus.
So 8 o'clock UTC, which is, let's see.
It's about 5 o'clock, no.
Is it
20? It's most people in the United States are asleep, so we should do one also at 8. At 8, the other end.
GMT plus what? No. UTC?
It's GMT is
UTC. Okay. So it would be...
It's 1 p.m. on the West Coast,
1 p.m., yeah.
4 p.m. on the East Coast, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. here.
No. 8 p.m. UTC? You said 8 hours UTC.
No, it's 20 hours.
Yeah, 20 hours.
Oh, okay, 20 hours UTC. Okay, that makes more sense. Everyone's awake.
What is that Drupal
zone issues?
Drupal-bugs, yep.
Yeah, Drupal-bugs.
And a lot of time it's the bug-fixing hour, but that's flexible. Sometimes it's the bug-fixing...
Get a beer, fix some bugs.
5 hours?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just lost. Day, but people just coming in, one person leaving, one person coming in, and just, you can just ask the most stupidest question. Nobody's going to tell you, quit support? But you just kind of ask, and then we'll be directed to the best place.
There you go. That's great. Fabulous. Good to know. Well, we should probably wrap things up so we don't just go on and on forever and ever. But I want to thank everybody on the panel and thank everybody in the audience for helping out, making it happen. And we'll do this again at future Drupal cons, and we'll do another Drupal podcast soon enough. We say weekly, right? Weekly. Every week. Yeah. Except for last week. And then
maybe
we'll try and get one next week. Anyways, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.